Back in 2000, Anthony Bono published an article that relayed a very interesting personal experience of his. While he was consulting for a company, the company's CEO passed away suddenly, and Bono offered his insights on his personal journey through that period. Each of us has had our experiences with tragedy, and many of these are very, very personal to us. But I wonder what the organization's reaction to such events tells us about the organization. My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. What Anthony Bono discussed in his article had a lot to do with the politics and the personal reactions to this event. He discussed that in the time of a couple of months of dealing with the CEO, he had collected a lot of information that was perhaps sensitive and private. Things that perhaps if the CEO had continued and survived, would not want to share. And Bono had to make decisions about how was he going to deal with this information as he continued his work for the company. It was a very enlightening article to me because it reminded me of a couple of instances in which I had been either first or near first experience with similar tragedy within organizations which I served. Of course, in a military organization, as with police and other first responders, the prospect of death or significant tragedy, injury, etc., is very real. So I'm not necessarily talking about those cases which are part of the experience of working in the line of duty. I am talking about the more tragic cases in which an individual's health fails, and therefore there's a sense that the individual was passed before his or her time. And I'd say that that was the case in the two instances I'm going to talk about now. In the first, this was a young officer who was having, apparently it had a heart problem of, or a heart condition of some kind, and woke up in, before going to the base and felt heart, or felt chest pains, severe chest pains. And unfortunately, at about mid-afternoon, he succumbed to heart failure. And it, he basically collapsed in the office, and his family was rushed. He had, very tragically, he had two young children. The chaplain had was rushed to the scene in order to provide last rites. Once it became apparent that this gentleman was not going to survive, and the chaplain in the weekend religious service, the following weekend, devoted his sermon to the entire experience of administering these last rites. Obviously, this was not something that he could have foreseen or could have necessarily prepared for because it happened so quickly. But it was a really gripping story. Not just to hear how he told of his experience, but also of all those around him, many of whom were shocked and in disbelief that someone who really was athletic, was very young, very vibrant, could just simply be taken away so quickly. And then the second one was a much more prolonged case, and this one was very much firsthand experience for me. And this was a very senior officer. And again, I'm not giving names because I did not ask permission. I don't think it's necessary to be able to convey the ideas. But this was a Navy admiral who I served with, who was in every way, shape, or form was a very typical or archetypical sailor personality. Very strong, very intelligent, highly intelligent, very worldly, intense, very intense personality. Definitely the type of a person that you can imagine being highly successful, commanding a large ship, traversing the world's oceans. And he was in a high level staff position when I worked with him, and unfortunately, he had come down with ALS while he was in this position, and it was a bit of a surprise to me. Apparently, I think others within the staff who had more daily contact with him had noticed that physically something was going on, because by the time that he elected to call a staff meeting together and tell all of us that he was diagnosed with this disease, he had come to the point where he could no longer lift his arms. And when he walked around, his arms just simply hung by his side. And he said that, what drove him to tell us the news was his inability to return salutes anymore. And this is a senior officer who basically is one of the standard bearers for the whole organization. And he's explaining practically apologetically that he is so sorry that he was unable to render proper military courtesies to all the wonderful people in the organization around him. The process of the way it works in the U.S. military organization is that you can be medically retired if you have a permanent disability, disabling condition such as ALS, and that affords you lifelong medical treatment. And I'm sure those of you who know about ALS know that the symptoms are really onset, that things can go fairly quickly. And he passed within months. He would stay with the command for a little while longer, to the point where it was difficult to watch. In order to drink out of a cup, he had to use both hands in order to just barely lift the cup off the table, and he had to bend his body over in order to be able to drink. And other sorts of things that many of us around were witness to. But all of us understanding his condition, we didn't want to show too much pity, and he asked that we not show pity. He asked that we carry on, soldier on was exact words as I recall, and just, continue as if nothing was going on, because there were still so many things that the organization had to do. And so he did eventually leave, and he was gone from this world very soon after. Now, those two cases stick in my mind because of the way that the organization reacted. The members themselves, of course, were honorable members, and the situations which they put in were ones that we would never wish upon anyone. But unfortunately, I think we're aware that such is not always the case. And although I do not have firsthand experience in this, I am aware of instances in which when a leader in an organization becomes terminally ill or severely disabled for some reason, that organizational politics can start turning pretty ugly. I have heard stories, again, not firsthand experiences, so I can't really relate them with much accuracy, but heard stories about how organizations start to turn on each other, that ill wishes are cast upon the victim, and folks begin jockeying for position, for successorship, or whatever. And when I hear those stories, I feel I mean, it makes me feel very, very sad, because regardless of what the situation is, that just strikes me as wrong. Whatever I mean by wrong, whatever we may all interpret as wrong, it's just not something that we would want to see. And so I started to think about, you know, what is it that those two organizations that I referred to, what is it that those two organizations showed that perhaps we might want to instill or encourage in organizations that we might deal with as scholars or practitioners? The word that stuck in my mind is grace. Now, I know grace is a term that's typically associated with religion, but it also does have some non-religious definitions. And one of these is the condition or fact of being favored. I came across an article by a psychologist by the name of James Bailey, who wrote about this type of grace, which in the course of living individuals, we would associate of being forgiven or absolved of wrongdoing. A particular case in which he was writing was about how a client was distraught because of being associated with some form of failure. And so that was kind of grace from an individual standpoint. The individual was going through a healing process, owned up, and admitted fault, and thereby, through grace, was able to continue. I think if I was to characterize it from an organizational level of analysis, if you would, that may not necessarily be the best definition to use. And so I am kind of driven to use the religious definition, which is a divinely given talent or blessing. And how I use that would be that because both of the individuals were honorable and humble, I think humility was very important, especially in the latter case with ALS. Please don't show me any pity. That was the humility and the honor was their divinely given talent. And in return, the organization as a whole echoed the same grace. We can think of it as the sum of individuals showing or echoing the grace back, but I tend to prefer to think of it as an organizational phenomenon of a shared understanding that was passed from among the members as the story or the news of these individuals' situation became public and became more widely spread once it was known. And so, all of the differences, all the dislikes, all the disagreements, all the politics, any of the things that would strike one as being, you know, a downside of organizational life, if you were, they were just simply set aside. They were set aside to ensure that the individual with grace was allowed to sustain it and that the organization would honor itself by honoring their falling comrade. So I really do kind of like that idea. It's not a common word that you would see in organization studies. In fact, I actually tried to find the use of the word grace in the context of an organization study and actually did not succeed. There may very well be some out there, and I encourage you, my listeners, to let me know if there are. But I didn't find one. And I know that, it's probably not one that we would use because of its religious connotation, but I do believe that there's room to describe something like it in a non-religious sense or in a different sense as something that we would want organizations to have, as something we would want organizations to strive for as part of their identity or part of their culture, as part of the ordinary way of doing business to honor its own members. And I suppose we could ask, would we not want to be part of an organization that has that? And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.